Well, do we have anyone here tonight over 90? Then there shouldn't be any reason why you shouldn't get involved in an exercise program. Two things I want to say about that film. One thing is, well, I've lost a little weight since that film. But secondly is the fact that I'm not a tennis player. How many of you noticed that back? It took a whole roll of film before they got one shot where I actually came in contact with the ball. But fortunately, I don't have to get my aerobic points with tennis. It is an aerobic exercise if you play singles, partners of equal ability, no doubles, just maybe for rest and relaxation, but not aerobic exercise. You know, I really don't know what you expect tonight to hear me talk about, but I'm not going to talk about just jogging. Because, you see, I don't care if you ever jog or run, whatever, because that's not necessary for you to get in good physical condition. I'm interested tonight in talking to you about preventive medicine. And there are four major building blocks for a good preventive medicine program. And you know what? It's so nice to talk about physical fitness and spiritual fitness together because they do fit. Never for one moment would I equate physical fitness on the level with spiritual fitness. But when you think about the relationship, you know, you can't be indifferent about the Lord, can you? Because you make a decision by just not making one. And it's the same way about exercise. You may say, well, I really don't care if I exercise or not because I'm just indifferent about it. No, you can't be. Because, you see, it's going to affect you, either the presence or the absence of it in your life. And, of course, we feel the presence of it in your life for the better. I think one of the saddest things that's happened in this country as far as physical fitness is concerned is that we've equated physical fitness with athletics. You do not have to be an athlete to be physically fit. Do you realize that probably less than about 1 to 10%, somewhere in there, of kids are naturally athletically endowed? But where does all of our money go in the schools? For the athletic programs, for those few kids who have the natural ability. What about the other 90% that are not taught lifetime sports? In other words, taught how to keep their bodies physically fit. And you don't have youth going for you as far as heart disease and some of the other problems that I'm going to speak about tonight. Well, once you're out of the cradle. So age has nothing to do with practicing preventive medicine. You start aging in the cradle, and it accelerates according to the society that we're living in today. It accelerates at even a more rapid pace. But, you know, when you start to talk about physical fitness, you have to explain what you mean. Because, unfortunately, another thing that we've done in this country, we've equated it with a nice-looking shape. In other words, if you have a Miss America type shape or a Mr. America type muscle build, that we've equated that with physical fitness. How you look on the outside is not the best indicator of what kind of physical condition you're in. Most exercise physiologists will agree that there are four major categories of exercises. The first type are the isometric exercises. Now, most of you have heard of isometric exercise, but do you really know what it is? It's the contraction of a muscle, but there's no movement of a joint. If I stand here and I press down on this podium, I'm contracting my muscle, but I'm not moving a joint. And about the only thing that's going to get me in condition for is perhaps more pressing down on podiums. But it is not. I was speaking at the seminary in Fort Worth not long ago, and I told some of those ministers it might be good for them, but only if they go a little bit more than isometric. But you see, it's the contraction of a muscle, like making a face at yourself in the mirror, but you're not doing anything for your heart. You see, we're interested in cardiovascular pulmonary fitness. And that's just medical terminology for your heart, your blood vessels, and your lungs. Because you can get along without a great looking shape. But you can't get along without a good cardiovascular system. The second large classification of exercises are the isotonic exercises. Now, isotonics, that's the contraction of a muscle, but there's movement of a joint. And most people, if they're involved in an exercise program, at least it's been that way in the past, this is where they fit in. And you know why? Because this is where calisthenics fit in. Weightlifting. There's nothing wrong with weightlifting, calisthenics, if you go on and do an aerobic part too. But if you just do calisthenics, and that's all, it's kind of like giving a car a new coat of paint when what it really needs is an engine overhaul. It really doesn't matter how great you look on the outside if you're falling apart on the inside because you won't be around to enjoy how you look on the outside. Now, I know we probably have some football players here tonight. And if you, I happen to know because my husband works with a lot of the major football, pro football teams in the country, from the Green Bay Packers to the Dallas Cowboys, and they do their calisthenics, but they also run a mile and a half in less than 12 minutes. Most of you, any of you play football here tonight, or any of you involved in athletic sport, you do your endurance type training on top of your calisthenics, don't you? Because you see, if you just do calisthenics and you build up a big, beautiful muscle, and you don't do anything for your heart, do you realize you're putting a strain on your heart because your heart has to work twice as hard to pump blood over here to feed this big, beautiful muscle you've built up? So actually, if you just build up muscles and you don't do anything for your heart, you may look great, but you aren't going to be around to enjoy it that long. You know, Mr. Texas, I won't say what year, but Mr. Texas came through our aerobic center in Dallas. And do you know that he was exhausted with a heart rate of 200 and something after being on the treadmill for about 13 minutes? And I'm sure it ruined his day when my husband told him that we had a 72-year-old grandmother who had had a stroke go 3 minutes long, had a heart attack go 3 minutes longer than you did the other day. So you see, how you look isn't necessarily the best indicator. All right? The third large classification are the anaerobic exercises. That's getting close to what we feel are the best type of exercises because they make the body demand large amounts of oxygen. And oxygen is the fuel for our body. But the only problem with anaerobic exercise is that it's too short in duration to do your heart that much good. It's like running the 100-yard dash, running around the block. You get that old heart to pounding, but just about the time you start to get some benefit, you stop. It's stop-start type activity. It's not sustained. This is where golf would fit in, if you don't use a cart. It makes me think of the woman who wrote and said, "Dr. Cooper, I'm an avid horsewoman. I ride horses every day for 2 hours, and I'd like to know how many aerobic points I get for that," because I'll explain about the point system in a moment. And he wrote back and he said, "Well, ma'am, you don't get any, but give the horse a bunch." Because, you see, you just don't get something for nothing. I mean, I'm the first person to wish you did, believe me, but you don't. You're going to have to expend some energy. You know, so many people will go out and they'll play 18 holes of golf riding on a golf cart. And they come back and they say, "Man, I feel fantastic." Now, you know they do, but you know why? Let me explain to you, because this really fouls up a lot of people. Exercise can be used in three different ways. It can be used for rest and relaxation. It can be used for figure contouring. And it can be used for cardiovascular conditioning. Now, obviously, if you've been riding on a golf cart and you come in, you haven't done anything for your heart and lungs, but you have for the rest and relaxation part. That's how you've used exercise. It makes you feel better. And unfortunately, so many people think because emotionally they feel better, they've done something for their heart. And you've done nothing if you haven't extended yourself more than riding around a golf cart. All right? That said, the anaerobic exercises, but let me go ahead. I said it can be used for rest and relaxation. It can be used for figure contouring. And then thirdly, it can be used for cardiovascular conditioning. Now, if you choose an exercise that is cardiovascular conditioning, one of the aerobic exercises, you're going to get the fringe benefit of those other two things. You are going to lose inches, and you are going to feel better emotionally. But you won't get the cardiovascular conditioning if you just do the figure contouring or the rest and relaxation. All right, that brings us then to the type that I want to talk to you for just a few minutes tonight about, the aerobic exercises, aerobics. My husband did not make the word up. It comes straight out of the dictionary and means literally with air or with oxygen. But I can assure you that word's been mispronounced more ways than you can ever imagine. I think one of the most interesting examples, I was invited to speak to one of the oldest social clubs in Dallas. And when I arrived, many of the charter members, I think, were there in their 80s and 90s. And I saw this one little woman with a shawl around her turn to the other one, and she said, I was young to them. She said, "What's this young woman going to speak to us about today?" And the other one said, "I think acrobatics." So I thought, well, I'll probably have as much luck with acrobatics as aerobics. But do you know what? Much to my surprise, that was one of the most attentive, receptive, responsive groups that I've ever had the privilege to speak to. Because I want to tell you something. I have seen tired, worn-out looking old women and men in their 20s. And some of the most exciting people I've ever seen have been in their 60s and 70s. And you know where you can see some tired, worn-out-looking old women? High school. 16-year-old, overweight, inactive, cigarette-smoking girls, and they look like dissipated old women. And the men aren't far behind them. I think about that tobacco slogan, "You've come a long way, baby." You have, but in the wrong direction in so many cases, you know. It's depressing, it's discouraging to me to see these young girls already dissipated looking in high school. You know, beauty is not skin deep, as I said in the film. There is a radiance and a glow in the face of men or women who are physically active that inactive people don't have. There is a dullness and a pasty look about people who are not physically active. They just don't have that zest about them. But you know, I don't have time to go into the development of the aerobics program, but I want you to know that it is a scientifically, medically sound conditioning program. It isn't some gimmicky exercise program that someone threw together overnight to sell books and make a lot of money. It is scientifically valid. The whole problem was, my husband was in the Air Force, and he was given the responsibility of designing a conditioning program that would bring these young men coming into the Air Force up to their peak level of physical capacity in as short a time as possible. Well, this is where the 12-minute test was developed. They would have you go out and see how much distance you could cover in 12 minutes and then put you in a physical fitness category. Because, you see, we would put a subject on a treadmill, like you saw in the film, have him walk to exhaustion while they had EKG leads on his chest, watching what his heart was doing under stress and measuring his expired air. In other words, they had a big mask on him with some tubes going over to some large canvas bags. They were measuring his oxygen consumption. Because, you see, that's the best indicator of what kind of physical condition you're in. In other words, if you've not been doing anything and you're inactive, we're all breathing in pretty much the same amount of air. But the person who is in good physical condition will be able to utilize or use more of that air that he's bringing in times of exertion than the person who's not in good physical condition. All right, they knew that an individual needed an oxygen consumption of 42 milliliters per kilogram per minute. Just remember 42. So they went to the field, and they found they could test large numbers of people at one time by this 12-minute test. And they found that if an individual under 30 years of age could cover a mile and a half in 12 minutes when brought back into the laboratory and put on the treadmill, 85% of them would be able to reach this good oxygen consumption level. If they couldn't even cover a mile in 12 minutes, invariably they'd have a very poor oxygen consumption level. All right, if you know they aren't in good condition, then how are you going to get them up to this good oxygen consumption level? And that's what the aerobics program is all about. My husband actually measured the energy cost for walking a mile in so many minutes and assigned it a point or numerical value. For running so many miles in so many minutes, for swimming so many yards, there are 28 different aerobic exercises. The next question then was, how many of those aerobic points per week was it necessary to accumulate to get the individual up to that level? They found 30 points per week, whether it was by walking, cycling, swimming, whatever, that 87% of the men would be able to reach that good oxygen consumption level if they would work up to 30 points per week. Women only 24 points per week. Now, you'd be amazed how many women attack me the minute I say that, because they say, we want to get 30 points if the men gets 30 points. That's fine. I mean, you can get 100 if you want to. But the point is that women don't have to work quite as hard to get up to that good oxygen consumption level. Their lung capacity is smaller, and it just doesn't take quite as much effort. All right, now that, in a nutshell, as briefly as possible, is how the aerobics program was developed. My husband had a lot of problems with that program because a lot of people, even though they hadn't done anything for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, went out to take a 12-minute test to see what kind of shape they were in. If you haven't done anything for 10 years, you know you're going to be in lousy shape. But unfortunately, so many people still think of themselves as that star high school track man or tennis player or whatever. And ladies and gentlemen, remember this if you don't hear anything else I say tonight. You cannot store physical fitness. It has to be incorporated into your daily life. I get the excuse, but Mrs. Cooper, I am so busy. I mean, how could I ever find time for 15 or 20 minutes of physical activity each day? I want to ask you a question. I want to see a show of hands of all of you here tonight who could not find time this morning to brush your teeth. Why, you wouldn't hold up your hand in a million years, even if you hadn't brushed your teeth. Because you know why? Because the dentists have done a fantastic job of brainwashing the people for the good that brushing their teeth is practicing good dental hygiene. And it is. But the physicians and the physical educators have done a horrible job in impressing upon people the importance of being physically active each day. And my husband comes from a long dental background, and I always use it when I speak to dental groups. I hate to say this, but you can live without your teeth, not as happily. But you cannot live without a good cardiovascular system. We stick a toothbrush in our children's hands by the time they can crawl almost. But how many parents talk to their children about being physically active each day? You'll find time for the things that are important in your life, whether it's your Bible study time or your physical fitness time. But you know, there's some benefits that you're going to receive if you're faithful 4 to 5 times a week to a regular exercise program. You know, one of the first things you're going to notice is that you breathe easier. A lot of people just breathe out of about the top half of their lungs. I'm sure some people probably were huffing and puffing just by coming up those few steps right there. There's actually a medical condition known as a sticky lung syndrome. It's like one of your children's balloons that's been around, or one of your own balloons, maybe. You see, the type audiences I've been speaking to are a little older, but one of the balloons around the house. And as it starts to lose its air, it starts to stick together. Well, that's actually the way our lungs are. You go out, some people start exercising, they haven't breathed deeply in so long that when they start forcing the air down into the lower part of their lungs, they think they're having a heart attack. That's true. We just don't push ourselves enough to breathe that deeply. Okay, you may say, well, I breathe all right the way it is. But a lot of people don't. Chronic pulmonary disease and emphysema is a real problem in this country. And with the increase in cigarette smoking, it is like wildfire. My husband had a patient who had emphysema so badly he couldn't even walk across a room without stopping once or twice to just breathe. He said, Dr. Cooper, I spend every waking moment just trying to breathe. Life isn't worth living like this. He said, do you suppose you could help me get involved in an exercise program and it would help? And my husband said, I can help you get in a program, but I don't know that it will help. Well, it took a year, and it took 1 year before that man could walk 1.5 miles in 30 minutes. But I want to tell you, it opened up a whole new world for him. He could play with his children without becoming completely exhausted. And speaking of children, one of the most exciting studies we have going under the auspices of our research center in Dallas is our study with asthmatic children. Some of these kids, 10, 12 years of age, are overweight, inactive, and had to miss a lot of school due to their wheezing attacks. To see these kids, mostly boys we've worked with, come in, start them into a slow, progressive exercise program, and see those kids in a few months cover 1.5 miles in 12 minutes without a wheezing attack. That's exciting. I would encourage you people, if you're interested in physical education and medicine in general, that's the medicine of the future, is prevention. Not what some doctor is going to develop for you in the form of a pill. It's going to be what you are willing right now to start doing for yourself. But you know, there's another benefit you will receive, and that's the fact that your blood vessels enlarge. Now, I'm not going to get into the controversy of the role that exercise plays in heart disease. I'm saying this as I'm getting ready to forge right ahead. But the point is that some physicians are still unenlightened enough, that not many, but that they may say, well, I don't really think exercise plays a role in the prevention or rehabilitation, either one, of heart disease. But let me ask you something. If that patient, if you know a person who has a heart attack and he's fortunate enough to survive it, what's the very first thing his doctor has him do? Start a walking program. But how many physicians do you know put their patient on an exercise program before they have that problem? The American Health Foundation made this statement. Ours is the legacy of a medical system that meets the patient with too much care too late. It really doesn't matter how fine a coronary care unit the Norman Municipal Hospital may have over here if you don't make it there. Now, I'm not telling you that if you exercise, you're not going to have a heart attack. But I can tell you this, because the data is overwhelming, that if you're exercising regularly and you have a heart attack, your chances of surviving it are as much as 5 times greater than the individual who's been doing nothing. It is practicing preventive medicine. All right? But as I said, your blood vessels enlarge. My husband feels that what happens is that when you're exercising, you're building up new little vessels in the heart. And if you have an obstruction in one of those vessels, well, these new little vessels, the collateral around that obstruction, is what helps you to survive it. All right, but I'm talking about something that you'll all, men or women, will identify with when I say your blood vessels enlarge, and that's varicose veins, varicosities. What happens, rather oversimplified, when you get a varicose vein, is that the vein loses its elasticity, and the blood pools down in there, making that dark, ugly spot on your leg or wherever. We feel that perhaps there's nothing in the scientific literature to document that if you start exercising, it's going to cure varicose veins. But I can tell you we've received ten thousands of letters since the first book was published in 1968. And many, many people have written us to say that once they start into just a walking program, that their varicose veins tend to improve. We feel that perhaps what happens is as you start to exercise, you build back up the integrity, the strength of that vessel, and that's why they do tend to improve. Another benefit you can expect to receive is that your heart becomes a more efficient pump. Now, I want to say something about that film. It did take me a year before I could run a mile nonstop. I've run up to 8 since then, but slowly. But the reason it took me so long is I had 2 handicaps. I was pushing our daughter, Berkeley, who was about 3 at the time, in a stroller, and pulling our fat blonde Cocker Spaniel on a leash up and down the hills of San Antonio. And those 2 things do tend to slow you down. But I remember when my resting heart rate dropped from 80 beats a minute to 57 beats a minute. This is the way Ken was so excited, because he is a scientist through and through. He said, "Now, Millie, do you understand what's happened? You weren't in condition, and here was your heart beating at 80 beats a minute, wasting all that energy. But then you got in condition, and it slowed down and became a stronger, more effective pump, pumping out more blood with each stroke." Well, I was glad that excited him. But I can assure you, something else happened that was much more exciting to me. But before I go on from there, now you may go home. Don't do it now. But if you aren't in condition, you haven't been doing anything, your resting heart rate is probably going to be somewhere from 80, maybe to 90 beats per minute. Now, you may take it and you say, "Well, I've got a low resting heart rate and I don't exercise." That could be indicative of a diseased heart. I'm not saying it is. Or it could be a reflection of some medication you're on. But I am saying that don't feel smug just because it's low. It's only important as far as protection from cardiovascular disease if it's lowered in response to a good exercise program. But the other thing that occurred that excited me more than my resting heart rate dropping was the fact that I had dropped 2 dress sizes. I'd always been 1 size at the top, but 2 sizes larger in the hips. And for the first time in my life, I could wear the same size dress all the way down. And I'll tell you in a few minutes why that meant more to me than just vanity's sake. Another benefit you can expect to receive is that exercise helps your digestion. You know, I use the example all the time, Marcine, of the nursing homes. I always say we have a friend in Oklahoma who has some nursing homes, and we found that these elderly people, constipation is a real problem in some of these older people, and that can complicate many other systems in the bodies. And they found that they can get these elderly people out just to take a daily walk around the grounds of the nursing homes, that in many cases it helps alleviate this problem. You digest your food better. It's as simple as that if you're physically active. Another benefit you can expect to receive is that you sleep better. You know, a lot of people get 12 hours of sleep every night and wake up totally exhausted. Some people can get 6 hours of sleep and wake up ready to go. Let me tell you why. It doesn't matter how many hours you spend in the bed. It's the quality of the sleep that you're getting while you're there, not the quantity. And you will get quality sleep when you're physically active during the day. A lot of people say if they exercise at the close of the day, it keys them up. They can't go to sleep. A lot of people say it relaxes them. The time of the day you exercise has to be your own individual thing. I'll say this. I happen to be a morning exerciser, and the attrition rate, the dropout rate, is much greater in the people who exercise in the evening than the people who exercise in the morning. Because somehow or other, if you get up and get it over with first thing in the morning, you don't have to dread it all day, and you can just be through with it. But lastly, one of the benefits you can expect to receive is that you become less of a hypochondriac. Now, I don't know that you don't have as many aches and pains and headaches and sore throats, but you know you bring a different attitude to them. And you know, as Christians, it's very important, too, that you feel good. If you're always thinking about how you feel and how tired and how exhausted you are, you're not going to be too interested in talking to someone about the Lord and helping them come to know Him in a personal way. You think about that. If you're wrapped up in your own self and how you feel. But people do tend to, and when someone says, "How do you feel?" you don't proceed to tell them. Somehow you just have a better attitude. All right? These benefits are collectively known as the training effect, the training response. And if you're faithful 4 to 5 times a week to a regular exercise program, you're going to taste alert and responsive. And you know, it's amazing psychologically. I'll get into that in just a moment, how exercise is being used too in working with people with mental problems. But I want to just mention a couple of clinical conditions that they're using exercise and working with. Tell me, what's the leading cause of death in this country? Right. Heart disease. We are in an epidemic stage of heart disease in this country. And listen to me. It is not a disease of old men and women. It is a disease of young men and women. Do you realize that in 1950, the American male, 21 years of age, ranked 11th in longevity among the major nations of the world? In 1970, I'm talking about 70, just not even 80. In 1970, you know where that American male, 21 years of age, ranked in longevity? In other words, how long he was going to live compared to the rest of the nations around the world? Do you know where he ranked? 41st. One of the most affluent countries in the world, and we're killing ourselves off by overeating, abusing our body, smoking, not exercising. Do you realize that heart disease had already started in the young casualty victims in Vietnam and Korea? They've had three-year-old children accidentally killed, and there's already cholesterol streaking in their coronary arteries. You do not have youth going for you. I want you to understand that. You must start now to practice preventive medicine. Because, you know, really, what does it matter? If you get a degree from here, you get a postdoctorate degree from Harvard, or go on wherever, no matter how much you put up here, if you don't take care of the heart, and you die of a heart attack like that, what a waste. You know, it appalls me when I see high schools phasing out compulsory physical education. In other words, this one man told me at a very prominent school in Dallas, well, my son is almost a genius, and he has to spend all his time studying because he's going to some prep school here and then on here, because he does not have time to exercise. And I just couldn't believe it. Because if you don't take care of the vehicle that keeps you going and holds the mind, what does it matter how smart you are? Because you aren't going to be around to use that. When I spoke at the seminary, and seminarians and physicians are two of the worst groups, I said, so what? You get all this knowledge. You know how long it takes to become a physician. And you get all this knowledge as a preacher to go out and tell the good news of how Christ loves us all over the world, and you drop dead before you get there. And you know, God didn't say that, well, you just turn your life over to me and you don't have to do anything else. Just sit down and enjoy yourself. Why do you think he gave us a mind? Why do you think he gave us the ability to make decisions and choices? And that scripture you read is factual. And it's true. And you look at the disciples that Jesus chose. Were they weaklings? You think any of us could walk the distances they walked in those days? I doubt it. All right? As I said. And then when you read that the American male, 21 years of age, has dropped from 11th to 41st in longevity, and then you read this. Do you realize the American Heart Association stated in the New York Times that since 1950, there has been a 14% increase in deaths from heart attacks, and you know what age group? Men 25 to 44. There is no doubt in my mind that many of you here have already lost a parent, or already have one, or maybe even have a friend who've had their first coronary incident. All right? Ladies, you're not immune either. Heart attacks taking a toll among women. Women are beginning to be as vulnerable to heart attacks as men, according to a Denver cardiologist. In the past, women were always presumed to be protected from heart attacks during their premenopausal years. It used to be until a woman had gone through the change of life, she didn't have to worry too much about heart disease. That's not true anymore. Dr. Kimball says, I hate to equate women's lib with this, but it would appear that women competing in a man's world are showing an earlier incidence of vascular problems. Now listen, see if this fits your life. They're eating more, they're smoking more, and at the same time, they're increasing their stress situations, and more women under 40 are dying of strokes and heart attacks. All right? There's a triad that exists in this country. And if these factors exist in your life, your parents' life, your boyfriend, your girlfriend's life, I don't care who, your chances of having a heart attack are fantastically increased. First of all, if you eat a high saturated fat diet, and you know what that is, don't you? The typical American diet. The junk food that most of us live on. I remember college from that much. That's what you live on, all right? High saturated fat diet. Second one, stress. And my goodness, is there ever stress? You have got stress right now, and I know it. But do you realize that kids in kindergarten have stress? Do you realize there is an increase in ulcer disease, according to the latest Journal of the American Medical Association, of ulcer disease in young children? And you wonder why. I live in a very affluent section of North Dallas, and I mean from the time that school bell rings at the spring until it rings in the fall, those kids are programmed. They're going to camp. They're going to take this lesson. They're going to take that lesson. Not necessarily because the kids want to, but mommy and daddy are too busy to spend any time with them, so they got to give these kids programmed. And let me tell you, there's stress. There's nothing wrong with camp. I send my kids to camp. Don't think I'm saying that. I'm just saying that kids never get a chance to relax. I mean, when they get to the point you're at right now, you know they're not going to relax. You know the stress that's on you. Dr. Hans Selye says, stress is not bad. It's the spice of life. Without it, there'd be no hits, no runs, no errors. What's wrong is how you handle the stress, how you burn it up. And the best way to burn it up is to go out and run before that exam or before you go to bed. Let me tell you something. I've been married 20 years, and I think one of the reasons we've stayed together is because every time I got ready to divorce Ken, he'd go run or I'd go run. And we got back, and we were so tired, we thought, who cares? It just isn't worth it. You know, we're too tired to go to court. No, but it is a great way to relieve emotional stress, all right? High saturated fat diet, stress. I'm telling you the factors, according to the American Heart Association. High saturated fat diet, stress, inactivity. And the best thing I can say about that is the attitude in America is, if it moves, put a motor on it. Now you think about that. Everything from automatic toothbrushes to automatic door controls on your TV. You don't even have to get up and go change the TV, to drive through banks, drive through cleaners. You really don't have to move if you don't want to. And a lot of people don't, except from the bed to the table to the car and right back again. All right, two other factors. You add this on and you're sitting on a keg of dynamite. You add the fact that you smoke cigarettes and that you come from a family that has heart disease in the family. These are the known risk factors, not according to Dr. Ken Cooper in the Aerobic Center. I don't want you to think I'm standing up here giving you some biased data. These are the known factors according to the American Heart Association, and that's the best source of reference we have in regard to heart disease at the present time. Now, as an intelligent individual, shouldn't you just try to, if you don't want to have a heart attack, shouldn't you just try to eliminate as many of those factors from your life as possible? That just makes sense. All right, look at them. Heredity, you can't do one single thing about. And let me say this, though. A lot of people get excited here. Heredity only becomes, and that is one of the strongest risk factors, but it only becomes a risk factor if you have a blood relative die of a heart attack or have a heart attack less than 50 years of age. Many people say, oh, my grandfather died of a heart attack at 65. It's only if it's less than 50 years of age that it becomes a very strong risk factor, okay? Look at them, heredity. Stress. I want to stop here for just a moment. I love this study that was conducted at Harvard University. My husband never uses this study, and you'll maybe understand why. I like it. But it was a study at Harvard University regarding the role that stress plays in heart disease. And this study showed, and listen carefully, that men who were unfaithful to their wives had a higher death rate from heart attacks than men who were faithful. I said, frankly, it serves them right, in my opinion. But they were under so much stress and strain, afraid that they were going to get caught, and that may go for boyfriends and girlfriends, too. But they were under so much stress and strain, afraid that they were going to get caught, that in many cases it was enough to precipitate a heart attack. I was giving this little bit of data to a group of men in Dallas, a men's club in Dallas not long ago, and this one little gentleman in the back of the room rather timidly held up his hand and he said, how high were those statistics again? I said, high enough, you better think twice if you're indulging. But the point is the fact that you can burn up stress, and that's the way to handle stress. I've cut this out of the paper and I loved it. Tests suggest love is the best medicine. Researchers at Ohio State University stumbled onto the finding while studying the effects of certain diets on laboratory rabbits. Now listen carefully. They fed two groups of rabbits the same high cholesterol diets, but the group that were cuddled and individually fed and talked to fared much better physically than the ones which received no attention and lacked the personal touch. Now I think that's a great way to burn up the stress, is to be a little more loving and kind to someone. All right? Heredity, stress, inactivity. Now, the only thing I can suggest in the role of inactivity, I love, it was summed up beautifully by Dr. Paul Dudley White when he said, walk your dog whether you have one or not. And that is very good advice. You know, it's funny. I'll hear people say, oh, my, I've just got to get home. My dog has been in all day. He's had no exercise. He's just dying. He needs the exercise. They understand that the animal needs the exercise, but they can't seem to understand about themselves. You know, one of the hardest group I have to motivate? working women. They say, you must be crazy if you think when I get home in the evening I'm going to go out and start exercising. I'm exhausted. Not any of those women do manual labor, but they are exhausted. You know why? Because they're mentally exhausted. You can come home, you can stretch out on the sofa with a drink, whatever, stay there for 2 hours, and I guarantee you're still going to be exhausted. But nothing will relieve mental fatigue like physical exertion. If when you feel exhausted, if you will make yourself get out and play some tennis, run, cycle, swim, whatever, I guarantee you, you shower, you'll feel like a new person. All right? Inactivity, stress, heredity, diet. I don't even have to say much about diet. You know how important that is. Nutrition is a field all of its own. I cannot stand people who I cannot bear to hear people say they become an expert in one field and then they think they know something about it in every field. A lot of politicians are like that. But what I'm saying is that our expertise is in the field of exercise physiology. Diet is important, but it's a whole other field. And as I told you, it's one of those four major building blocks for that good preventive medicine program. Proper weight, proper diet, proper exercise, and avoiding tobacco. And if you don't know what a good balanced diet is, call your local American Heart Association. There are your home economics department here. Someone can help you know what a good balanced diet is for yourself. And I won't even get into the role that they feel that may be playing in cancer and in all kinds of diseases. All right? Then that brings me to the one, and if you think I have been preaching, you haven't even heard me get started. Because I am going to hit something that is going to touch you, and it's going to make you mad, a lot of you, because you think I've already stopped preaching and gone to meddling. But that's cigarette smoking. Because you see, there's nothing good to say about cigarette smoking. Now, I realize that if you smoke, you've made that decision, and you've heard more intelligent people than me talk about the ill effects of it, and etc. I'm not even going to talk to you about you stopping smoking. But you know what? Right here's you're the leaders of the world to come. And it is so vitally important that those young lives that you're going to come in contact with, that you encourage those young people never, never to start smoking. Because you know it's an addiction. It is an addiction, like drinking or anything else. And you cannot quit 99% of the people unless you have professional help to help you stop. I have compassion because I know it must be hard for you to stop. I've never smoked, but I've gone through refrigerators shaking like a leaf thinking I don't care if I weigh 500 pounds. I've got to have something to eat. And it's the same thing. People say, well, you can see someone smoking a cigarette saying, well, look at that fat slob there. And the fat slob there saying, well, look at that person smoking. Looks like they could quit. It's an addiction in both cases, and it needs professional help in most cases. But you know why I'm talking to you about it? As I said, because you're going to touch the lives of thousands and thousands of young people. And it is so vitally important that you encourage these young people never to start smoking. I don't know why people think it's cool, it's macho, it's neat. Roger Staubach's one of the most macho men I know, and he doesn't have a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. But you know, this is why I'm talking to you about it. Smoking drive, and listen carefully, smoking drive aimed at children. The American Cancer Society is so concerned about young people smoking that a special warning program has been started for kindergarten children. The program includes a free kit with coloring books. For a long time, said Dr. Charles Westfall, we used to hit children later on, but we're finding out that fifth and sixth grade children have already picked up the smoking habit. They're using lunch money to buy cigarettes. By the fifth grade, we found that half the students have tried smoking. And then you read this. Schools approve smoking areas. All but two senior high schools in the Dallas Independent School District have designated smoking areas on campus. The survey made at the request of the school board also revealed that three Dallas Independent School District junior high schools have designated smoking areas. When will it be grade school? I tell you, you know what groups had the largest increase in cigarette smoking in this country? Girls, 12 to 17. And then you read this, breast cancer linked to smoking hinted. A possible link between cigarette smoking and breast cancer was uncovered Thursday by University of California investigators. They show that nicotine will accumulate in the milk-secreting ducts of a woman's breast. These early years are a very sensitive period in breast development, he said, and there is evidence that episodes initiating breast cancer in later years may occur in the breast development years. I tell you, I go at noon to the Dairy Queens and the Burger Kings with my kids, and I see these kids coming in from high school, these 12 to 17, that age group, and I see these young kids smoking, pulling that nicotine down into those little forming lungs, and I want to walk up to them, and I want to touch them, and I want to say, don't destroy the most beautiful gift you'll ever receive. Do you realize that you may have 10 Rolls Royces, you may have a $6 million home, but you have already got the greatest gift that you are ever going to have, and that's your body. And it is beautiful. God designed it so uniquely beautiful, it's overwhelming. And I spoke to those kids at Baylor the other day, and I told them, you bet your life your body is yours. It doesn't belong to your parents or anyone else. It's yours. Now, you want to wipe out your mind with drugs? Do it. You want to wipe out your liver with alcohol? Do it. You want to wipe out your lungs with nicotine? Do it. But kids, it's not like that song says. You can rely on the old man's money. Because you don't rely on the old man's money or your own money, as far as that's concerned, for a new body. There is one to a customer, and you can spend it up just as rapidly as you want to. I see people who take care of that beautiful gift. They feed it right. They exercise it right. They use moderation, and it lasts them like Eula Weaver in their 90s. I see other tired, worn-out hulls of an individual in their 20s. But it's yours, and you have that right. But you know what? There's a slogan that I've seen that's summed up in a bumper sticker on cars in Dallas. And it's the surest way I know to destroy you as an individual and to destroy us as a country, as a nation. You know what it says? If it feels good, do it. One of these days, I'm going to back up and I'm going to go wham, I'm going to say, I don't know, fella, it just felt good to me. Because, in other words, do your thing, regardless of how it's going to affect the person sitting next to you. In other words, blow your smoke in his face. What do you care if he happens to be one of those four groups that I'm going to tell you that it's going to hurt? Do you realize that if you're a heart disease patient, you should never be confined in a room where you have to inhale cigarette smoke? It can cause angina. If you wear contact lens, it irritates the eye. If you happen to suffer from a lung problem, asthma, bronchitis, sinus, and the most tragic group of all that suffers from the side stream smoke, which has 12 times the nicotine content in it than the person who's smoking himself, you notice where they always hold them for the other person. We have a friend who is a blind man, and when he flies on airplanes, he carries a little portable fan, and he always turns the fan in the direction of the smoke, and he said, I don't want you to miss any of that cigarette, and he blows the smoke back on. But as I said, the fourth and the most tragic group of all are young children. Do you realize that if you smoke, and I won't even get into what happens to us, woman when she's pregnant smoking, what happens to the child. But do you realize that if you have a young child in the home, less than 6 months of age, that has to breathe cigarette smoke in that home, that child, you are establishing possibly a lifelong history of chronic lung disease in that child. I know I have a friend who's a kindergarten teacher, and she said, it is so depressing. She said, I could cry in the mornings when I hug my little first graders, or little kindergartners, and they reek of cigarette smoke. You know why these kids start? Number one, peer pressure. You know about that, don't you? Still important to get in the right sorority and fraternity, isn't it? Maybe. I worked my way through college. I didn't have time for it. I would like to have. I thought it was fun. But, you know, peer pressure is still very, very important. And let me tell you, there's peer pressure in first grade. That's why I think a uniform would be great myself. For the kids. But all right, let me tell you about peer pressure. It is very, very difficult to be yourself in a world that is determined to make you just exactly like everyone else. I wear my hair teased and old-fashioned according to the day's standards. It's not windswept and windblown, etc. You know why I wear it that way? 'Cause I like it. And I am determined that I am not going to be made to look just like everybody else. Kids say, I want to be different. Do you? You go to the high schools and colleges, they look like a bunch of sheep. They've all got their hair the same way, and they all got the same clothes on. They haven't got the courage to be different. But I guarantee you, if you want to stand out and you want to be somebody important, be different. That's the way to be noticed. But peer pressure is strong. All right? Secondly, you know why they start? One or both parents smoke in the home. And thirdly, I think one of the most disgusting things of all, attractive advertising. That's why I admire Roger Staubach's a good friend of ours, and Kyle Roat Jr., and I admire those two young men because they endorse things that are helpful for young people. I think any athlete that uses his platform of fame to promote something harmful to the body is going to be held accountable by God for that someday. I really believe you'll be held accountable for that. But I feel very strongly, if you haven't gathered from about cigarette smoking, because I have a sinus condition, and when I get in where there's smoke, my ears, the polyps in my nose swell, puts pressure on my ears, and I can't hear, and that's rather annoying. And we were in Philadelphia not long ago, and we went into this restaurant to eat, and it was a very gourmet-type restaurant, and you sit shoulder to shoulder, and they had just put the food down in front of me. And I just started to eat, and the man sitting next to me here took out his pipe, and his date took out one of those cigarillos, you know, one of those long ones. And I turned to Ken, and I said, Ken, do something. And he said, Millie, did you see how large that guy is? I said, I don't care, Ken, you've got to do something. And then I sat there for a moment, and I said, Ken, if Madeline Murray O'Hare, one woman, can get God taken out of the public school, can get prayer taken out of the public schools, and in God we trust, perhaps off of our money, because that's what she's working on now, then surely me, as one woman, can get cigarette smoking banned in public places. And he made a very astute observation. He said, but Millie, unfortunately, people aren't that addicted to God. Wouldn't it be great if they were? Wouldn't it be great if we could put positive addictions in our lives instead of harmful addictions? Okay, I'm going to get off cigarette smoking. This is to pass on to your mothers. None of you probably fit in this category, but do you realize that women 40 to 44 years of age who are smoking and on the birth control pill have a 12 times more likelihood of dying of a heart attack? Okay, I'm going to get off cigarette smoking. I'll give you a rest. And there's nothing good, as I said, to be said for it. But if you're hooked, try to make sure that no one you love gets hooked. And go to Smoke Enders. Go to some group that'll help you get unhooked. But another condition that 25% of the American population, that 50 million Americans suffer from, that at least 25% of the American population are at least 15 pounds overweight, obesity. Now, if you think the cigarette smokers are sensitive, this group is far more sensitive. And as I said in the beginning of the film, I come from a family that has to fight obesity. My grandmother died weighing close to 300 pounds. I know what it's like to see people struggle with weight. And I myself cannot run for a few days and eat normally and I can pick up 10 pounds. We went on a trip this summer and I can pick up 8 pounds in 8 days because I wasn't running. So I know what it's like to fight. But do you realize that when you exercise and you're not dieting, I mean, when you diet and you're not exercising, you get weak. You know why? Because you're burning up about 50% fat and about 50% muscle mass. Whereas if you will exercise and diet together, then you're burning up 100% fat. You know, my sister Alice has a real problem with weight, and she's here tonight, so I have to revamp this presentation a little bit than what I usually say. But Alice knows that I use her as one of my best examples because Alice has such a fantastic sense of humor. And she just recently, and I always tell my audiences that Alice says for me to solicit prayers for her because she needs them. And it is hard. When you get hungry, you want to eat. But she just fallen and broken her or thought she'd broken her elbow on the ice when y'all had the ice here not long ago. And, gosh, she just got started back into a good dietary restrictive program. And she called me and she said, they may have to do surgery on my arm. And I said, Alice, don't you even dream of letting one cut on your arm until you have a second opinion. And she said, well, Millie, that makes me think of this story I heard the other day. It said, seems this woman came in to see the doctor, and she had this huge wart on her nose. And he said, well, my goodness, ma'am, that is terrible. He said, we're going to have to take that off. He said, well, it might even be malignant. And she said, could I have a second opinion? He said, yes, and you're ugly. So, so Alice got her second opinion, and she didn't have to have her arm operated on. And some of you tonight may want a second opinion on some of the things I've said. And you know what? I hope you do. Because it will stimulate you to study and to learn and realize that I'm just scraping the top of what you really need to know. Because how dangerous it is to take the sedentary life. Okay, I know we're running late. I've got some books back here. I'm going to give you all time to buy some, I hope, and sign. They're in paperback, Aerobics for Women and What Every Woman Still Knows, both. But I want to mention a couple of other conditions that respond well to exercise. Hypertension. My dad over here is a good example. He lost about 35 pounds, stopped smoking about 3 packs of cigarettes a day. However, then he couldn't stay off of them, started chewing tobacco. And I told him I was going to get cancer of the lip instead of the lungs. But, and believe me, do you know this skull and this chewing tobacco and all that stuff that the really macho guys, or whatever they call it now, are into, are causing leukoplakias, cancers in the lip? I had a dentist the other day tell me, Millie, you would not believe the young men coming in that have already got precancerous lesions in their lip from this stuff. That skull, tobacco, any of that stuff. Oh, you're so much more kissable if you smell good. And golly, at this age, that was important. I tell you, it's important at any age, I tell you. But, all right, as I said, Daddy took off about 35 pounds and he stopped smoking and he started walking 3 miles a day. And I think he's about, I won't tell his age, he's very sensitive about it, but he walks about 3 miles a day now. And his triglycerides, which were 800, 100's normal, responded beautifully. His blood pressure, without medication, was down for the first time. You know, when you go to the blood, if you go to the doctor and you have high blood pressure, he can do two things. First of all, he could say, all right, now we're going to put you on a dietary restrictive program, get your weight down, get you into an exercise program. Now, do you think the doctor's going to take the time to say that? No, most of them won't. And you know why they won't? Because they know the patient doesn't want to hear it. They want a pill. It is so much easier to get a pill. But do you realize it would scare you to death if you even really knew the side effects of aspirin? There are side effects of every medication. And the least amount you can get by with, the better. All right? Many other adult onset diabetes. I don't mean juvenile diabetes that you were born with, but adult onset, where you gain weight and start passing sugar in your urine as you get a little older. This responds beautifully to many exercise programs. All right? And this is the last. The psychological effect. You know that we can document with personality profile testing a change in an individual's personality once they become involved in an exercise program. They look better. They feel better. They have a better self-image. And as I told you before, we're getting many psychiatrists are referring us many patients with severe emotional diseases that they're finding that they're using exercise and helping these people. But before I move on and finish that statement, I want to tell you about a tank we have in Dallas at our center. It's a big tank filled with water, and it has a little elevator. And you can stand on this little elevator nude, and you're lowered into this tank of water, and it tells you exactly what your ideal weight should be. It tells you, it's based on the Archimedes principle of displacement of water. How much of your body's fat and how much is muscle. And you can't say, well, I got big bones. That's what I've been saying a long time. But if you're ever in Dallas sometime, stop by and see our total body volume meter. All right? The girls that you saw in the beginning of the film were a group of girls that I used to run with every morning. We'd get up every morning at 5:30 and we'd run 4 miles. We had young children. We needed to get our exercise done before our husbands left for work. Now, I'm not saying 5:30 is most people's cup of tea, but I want to tell you something. It's a great time to get up and get the day going early in the morning because it awakens you for the day in a way no other way can. But those girls, I wish you could see some of them. One girl I remember, she was seeing a psychiatrist. She was smoking about 3 packs a day, and she was about 40 pounds overweight. Well, Gail lost about 30 pounds. She cut down to about a pack and a half, and she only saw her psychiatrist about once a month. I'm not saying exercise is a panacea, but at least it's helpful. Like I spoke to a bunch of home builders, and everyone in there was smoking. And I said, well, if you can't stop smoking, at least get out and walk. So the next day I saw two of them walking just as fast as they could and smoking just as fast as they could. But at least they were doing something. They weren't just getting the ill effects of both inactivity and cigarette smoking. But when we come back in the morning, I remember we had all kinds of ways to get those girls to keep running. As a matter of fact, one girl joined the group and she said, I just can't go another mile. But she said, I just got to hear the end of that story. And no one wanted to quit because they're afraid everybody started talking about them. So we had lots of ways to keep them motivated. But when I would come back in the mornings, I don't know for the rest of the girls what they did, but for me personally, I'd get Ken's breakfast and get him off to work about 6:45, and then I had about 30 or 40 minutes quiet time before the children got up. And for me personally, this is when I had my Bible study time. I don't have time tonight to give you my own personal testimony, but what Terry, that the young lady who gave her testimony, said is so true. There's nothing that makes you feel as good as being spiritually fit. My husband, aerobics is so well known in Brazil, they call it Cooper instead of aerobics. Ken just met with the president of Brazil in Brasilia at Thanksgiving to open up 8 miles of jogging trails. They've got Cooper signs on Ipanema, Copacabana Beach. I'm only telling you this because of the opportunity it's given us as Christians. Billy Graham asked Ken to stand in Maracanã Stadium and give his testimony to 243,000 people. Think about that. Because you see, Ken is a well-known physician. He's respected for what he's done throughout the world for physical fitness. But he's first and foremost a Christian. You know, right here, it probably wasn't this building, Max, was it, when he was in college? But he thought he would be a medical missionary. And he is. But it's just not to China. We have some of the top corporation men in America. Chairman of the boards of IBM, Xerox. Come through that center, and Ken witnesses to them as a Christian, not only about their physical life, but about their Christian. You see, you don't want to slack either one. It's great to be working for the Lord, but He wants you to keep your body physically fit while you do it. But by 8 o'clock in the morning, I have prepared myself to the very best of my ability, both spiritually and physically. Now, that doesn't mean that nothing bad is going to happen to me during the day. But I guarantee you, if you're prepared in those two ways, it's going to make a big difference in how your day goes. I think one of the saddest things that's happened in our country is so many children never have the opportunity to earn anything anymore. Our little son, Tyler, wanted a little teddy bear called Paddington. He wears a little raincoat and a little rain hat. You know Paddington. He cost $15. I could have bought him like that, like any of you could. But I said, no, Tyler, you have to save your money. Well, if you could have seen him saving those pennies week after week, the discipline. Because if you don't have an exercise program in your life, that's why. Not because of lack of time, but because of lack of discipline. But he saved his money till one day he could buy Paddington. He wanted a little car along the way. I said, sure, Ty, you can buy the car, but it means Paddington's going to be a little bit farther down the line. He said, no, I don't think I will. You see, he learned discipline. I love that little fella. And some cold mornings when I see him walking to school, I want to go out there and I want to put a coat around him and bundle him up. And I don't want him to be uncomfortable because, you see, when you love somebody, you don't want him to hurt. You don't want him to be uncomfortable. But because I do love him is the reason I don't. You see, I know the day's going to come when I'm not going to be there to wrap my arms around Tyler and protect him from the hurts that are going to come in life. They're going to come in each and every one of your lives if they haven't already come. And you know what? When they come in Tyler's, I don't want him to turn to drugs, to alcohol. I want him to be strong. I want him to learn discipline. The saddest people in the world are people who've never had an opportunity to earn anything in their lives on their own. You know, I want to leave you with this thought, a challenge. We work so hard. We're a very, very materialistic society, and I'm just as guilty as the rest of you. We work so hard to build up a big financial estate to leave our children so they won't have to work as hard as we did. But I want to encourage you to think about leaving a different legacy to the people that you're going to come in contact with. Think about leaving them a physical legacy. Because you see, if you can instill in those young people that you come in contact with a burning, overwhelming desire to keep their bodies physically fit and the self-discipline that goes along with doing that, then you're going to give them a gift that is going to affect every area of their life, academically, socially, emotionally. Plus, if nothing else, it's tax-free. I'm going to go autograph my book. Thank you.